Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler. I'm a developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Laura.
Hey, are you okay?
No.
What's wrong?
Oh, I just feel queasy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was worried about you since you weren't on early.
Mm-hmm.
You don't sound so great.
No.
Oh, well, it's a good thing you don't have to feel so great to do our show, huh?
Yeah.
If you have to get off, that'll be okay. I'll go this one alone.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry you're feeling bad. I could hear it in your voice. Oh.
Mm.
Well, today we're going to be talking about how to be animated.
Oh, good.
And how to really engage your toddler in play, so that you can use playtime to teach all the language skills that we like to talk about and all the cognitive skills, and how play really should be a parent's first trick or first line of first order of business when they're looking at helping a toddler learn how to interact and, in my opinion, learn language. And we've had this conversation many, many times, Kate, where we talk about if a kid with a language delay, we're learning language just in everyday activities, just in taking a bath, just in having snack, just in going outside, just in riding to pick up the older kids in carpool, there would not be a language problem because he would have already done it. And so we know that those kids need extra special focused time just on them to be able to learn to pick up those words, not only with saying those words, but more importantly with understanding those first words and those early directions. And the best thing that parents can do is really teach those kinds of things during play, and play really lends itself to that kind of learning opportunity every day. And that's one of the first recommendations I make to parents when I see them, when I get a new little client, as we talk about how much time they're actually spending one-on-one with their child every day, not when the TV is on, not when they're doing other things, when they're just focused on them and just playing. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. You going to chime in here? No, not really, huh?
Nope.
Oh, no. Okay, well, we are using an article from the Center on the Social and Emotional Foundations for Early Learning from Vanderbilt University as kind of our reference point today, and I'm going to put that link on the website in the comment section under today's podcast. I didn't even say today. If you're not listening live, it's Thursday, November 5th. And if anybody is listening live, we'd love to have your question. Our number that you can call in is 1-718-766-4332, and you can ask us about this topic today, about play and how to engage your child, your toddler, your preschooler, and play and use that to teach language, or any other question that you have about late talking or early child development. We'd be glad to take callers today. All right, so back to our article. This article is really, really basic and stresses how important it is for kids to play. And one thing I like that it said that I read in lots of things when I read about playing is to think about play as your child's work, and that's how important it is to him, and that it really, again, should be something that parents schedule and that they think about just like they do about, you know, making sure that your child is fed and making sure that your child gets a bath, is making sure that you schedule that time to really sit down and focus on him and play. And some parents, I think, kind of show up for play. You know, their bodies might be there. They might actually have made it to the floor to sit down with their little boy or little girl, but they're not really engaged. They're not participating. They're not really doing more than just kind of showing up. You know, they're not thinking about how they can get their little boy or little girl to play. They're not actively participating in that. You know, it just kind of looks like a body is there. And it really takes a little bit more than that, again, to make a toddler want to play with you, for you to be more interesting than pushing that button on that sound toy over and over and over and over and over again, you know, again, to really be there, really kind of make more of an effort with that. All right, the article is called Make the Most of Playtime, and again, the beginning talks about how children play through repetition sometimes, and it gives some really cute examples of how you'll start to maybe play peekaboo with your child, and it's not just enough to do it one or two times. They want to do it over and over and over again, and how much fun that is for kids. And the point is that your child's little brain needs tons of repetition to be able to synthesize that information and be able to predict what's going to happen next, and they don't want it to stop. And again, two or three, four times may be fine for you, but they want to keep doing it over and over and over. And it talks about the importance of being willing to do that repetition and willing to play the same silly little game like peekaboo over and over and over. And it also gives this funny example about a little boy who keeps throwing his sippy cup in the trash. And the first time, the mom's really patient, and she picks it out and washes it off and hands it back to him. And then the little boy with a big grin does it again. And then the mom is getting a little more frustrated every time he does it, and this time she gets mad at him, and she tells him the sippy cup doesn't go in the trash and to stop playing. And then before she can distract her little boy with another game or remove the trash can to another location, he does it again, and his mother just is so frustrated with that at this point. And it really talks about how, again, it's that repetition that children really, really crave, especially in that early toddler phase, that 12 to 15-month phase, and how they really want to do the same things over and over and over again. And I know as a therapist, for me, sometimes, you know, after 20 minutes with a toy, I'm kind of done and want to move on. But you do have to, excuse me, sometimes stick it out and think, oh, how can I make this a little bit more entertaining for me and a little more interesting for him, because kids do really kind of crave that repetition. Kate, I think I heard a little laugh or something. Did you want to comment on that? You're feeling so bad, aren't you?
I'm starting to feel a little better. Yeah, I was going to say that on both of these examples, how important the social connection is there between the child, you know, whether it be the younger baby or the 14-month-old, where they're so connected with the person playing with them. You know, and I
right.
think that the social aspect of it is so important to communication. So definitely lots of our therapy sessions are focused at trying to get them to play with us and engage with us and have that back and forth interaction, because that's kind of what stimulates communication.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes we'll get a new assessment for a new kid, and we'll go in, and he's kind of in his own little world. He's not really doing lots of that social interaction. You know, he might have a car in his hand, and he's over there kind of rolling the car back and forth, or maybe a train, and he's sitting on the floor and has the train right about eye level on the coffee table.
We're laying on the floor.
Yeah. You're right. It would be worse.
With his head to the side. Yeah.
Right, on his belly, and he's rolling the train back and forth right in front of his little eyes. And, you know, Kate, this is your expression, a bomb could go off, and he would not really realize that because he's so engrossed in watching those little wheels spin. So with a child like that, when we talk about playing, to a parent, we're really emphasizing the social aspects of that, like you just brought up. You know, we really want kids looking at us and having those twinkly, sparkly little eyes and just kind of lighting up and really enjoying that it's a joint activity, that it's not all about just them watching the wheels go back and forth. You know, that's not very purposeful or very functional. And granted, lots of kids who are on the spectrum, you know, who go on to be diagnosed with autism, whether it be, you know, the most severe case you've ever seen or a kid that just has kind of a few of those little red flags, sometimes get so focused on that kind of repetitive visual play that they miss all that great social interactive play. And actually being able to engage a baby in that social, the earliest little social games, patty cake, peekaboo, all those things should really be happening before a child is even one, So if you're listening and you have a 15-month-old or an 18-month-old or a 2-year-old who, you know, you're concerned that they're not talking, and then you're listening to us right now and we're talking about all these games and all this interaction, and you're thinking, oh, no, my kid doesn't really do that. He's not interested in me. He doesn't really respond to those kinds of things. You know, I want to stop right here and tell you that your place to start with him, with working on language, really isn't about learning to talk or say those words. It's with getting that social peace and that social connection. And Kate and I, when we were talking about the show this week, or maybe we were talking about something else, but this week, I know, or in the last week or so, we've talked about how many parents will say, either when they call us here on the podcast or when they're sending me an email or a comment on my website at teachmetotalk.com, they'll often say, I didn't realize how important that social connection is, or I didn't realize that he's not interacting with me, and I didn't realize that until, you know, I watched your DVD or until I heard you guys talk about it on the podcast, because I think that's something that lots of parents just don't, maybe aren't hearing from people. Kate, do you want to talk about that for a minute? Because I know we had a conversation about this in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think we've heard it the most is when people have seen your DVDs, where they see how you do it with the kids, and then they start to implement, and this isn't a plug for the DVD, but, you know, I think our conversation was when they see it, they really understand how it's just different from sitting and kind of passively being there with the child, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I think we have a caller.
Oh, good.
Hello. Hi, caller. Are you there? Hello? Hello, caller? Oh, I pushed the button and it looks like they're there. All right, can you hear me?
I can hear you, but I called in a while ago.
Maybe they hung up. Oh, cold feet. If you want to call back, call us back at 1-718-766-4332. Maybe they'll call us back. Yeah, and it is, I do think sometimes that people just kind of think about their own kid, well, that's just his personality.
Right.
He's not going to, he doesn't like games like that, and so I don't ever try to play that, and they somehow dismiss that as that's not the real problem. That doesn't have anything to do with him not talking. That's just, he's, you know, I've had parents will say to me, well, he's just not a happy kid. Or he's just not into that. And, you know, you have to sometimes kind of work with a mom and dad to try to say, yeah, but he should be. And that's not really what we're looking for here. We want all children to learn to have a good time and be social and be interactive. And really that is such an important foundational skill for communication that that's where we want to start with so many children and a lot of parents don't make that connection at the beginning, and they might not even, they either dismiss it or they don't even realize, oh my gosh, you're right, he's not really interacting with me very much. He might come up and grab my leg when I'm washing dishes, or he might sit in my lap, but as far as really looking in my eyes and really having that connection with me and really tuning in and really lighting up when we sing our little songs or play our little games like hide and seek or peekaboo or tickle, tickle, tickle or those kinds of things. They don't do very many of those things, and they don't realize how important that is. So that certainly is a starting point for play. I have an article on my website at teachmetotalk.com that's called Social Games for Infants and Toddlers, and you can find that in the section if you go on the homepage. Gosh, we've been trying to redo the website for, a good 6 months now. But if you go on the homepage and there's a little category bar at the top, and you can click the drop-down boxes and pick the category that says Great Toys and flip back through. It'll take you to another kind of landing page or homepage, and you can scan down until you find the article that is called Social Play. And there are lots of little games and routines that you can do with your child and really get them kind of going with that. And sometimes it takes a while. A kid who's not very social or very interactive, it may take you playing that game with him 5 times or 6 times or 15 times. Kate, I think a couple of weeks ago you were talking about a little boy on your caseload that's pretty young, mm-hmm. that you really are having to kind of teach to mm-hmm. like those kinds of mm-hmm. games, aren't you?
Yeah. And he is beginning to learn to like them somewhat and to be able to participate. You know, sometimes it's hard to, when kids may have other issues, you know, they don't necessarily have the skills just fine motor-wise to do things, you know, so they don't necessarily do as much. But, yeah, he's beginning to do better on those things, and mom's been working really hard on, you know, trying to get some little routines with him, and he's beginning to. It's coming around.
What kinds of routines are you guys doing in therapy, and what's mom doing?
We started with patty cake, mm-hmm. and he is now beginning to do that. And
that's good.
I call him tickle tickle. I call get him, and he's enjoying that. He likes to do a lot of peekaboo kind of stuff now.
I'm working with a new little boy that's got lots of issues. He's got a diagnosis of cerebral palsy, but he also had a stroke when he was a few days old, and he also had some major bowel obstruction. So he's got lots of med, and he's got a hole in his heart, as mom told me today. You know, and again, I'm the replacement therapist, so I didn't I wasn't there at the very beginning when everybody's kind of learning all the history, and he's had several surgeries and stuff, so really complex kind of background medical history. He's not just a late talker, you know, he has really severe neurological things going on. But we were talking about today when I saw that family, grandma was there and dad was there, and we were talking about how their version or their definition of him participating in peekaboo is a lot different than my definition.
Oh, really?
Their definition was that they would do all the work. They would put the blanket on top of him. They would take the blanket off. They would initiate it. And his job, they thought if he was just kind of glanced at them, that he's doing peekaboo.
Oh.
And I just said, no. This is what I mean. And boy, and last week I did it, and he had a better reaction than he did today. Today when I got there, he was sleepy, and I was doing a co-treat with his physical therapist so we could kind of talk about motor-wise if my expectations for him in play are realistic with his motor limitations. Because, you know, because of that stroke, he's got right side weakness. So not only are his little muscles tighter anyway, he can't even, you know, his good side is not really even a good side, and his bad side is pretty bad as far as, you know, being able to use his arm, and he's just learned to sit up, and, you know, so again, it's going to be kind of a long haul for this little guy, but he's got a really great social spark, as we say, and a great little twinkle when you can kind of get him. And we were just talking about today how I really, even though, you know, he's not, his motor skills are way behind, he is still very capable of putting that blanket on his head and taking it off, you know, if he's lying on his back. And so today I was talking to him about that's his part of the game, that he really has to be able to not only kind of look at me when we're doing it, but I want him laughing, and I want him, when I put the blanket on, that he's tossing it off and that he might reach over and try to get it himself and put it back on, and that he doesn't want to just, you know, that it's not okay to do it one time. You know, I want to do it 15 times in a row, and I want to hear some belly laughs and really get him going and him want to participate in that. And they were just talking about how different that is than their expectation that they would do it once or twice, and that if he kind of looked at him, that's enough, and that they were doing all the hard work on, you know, putting the blanket on and off. So even on a very basic level, even with really young kids, or even with a kid that's really, really, really behind, you still want to create the expectation and the opportunity for them to participate and do their part so that you know that they're kind of with you in the game and that they're, again, enjoying it and thinking it's funny and learning through all this so that they know what their little part is and that they keep doing that.
Well, and Linda, it's like when they learn their routine and begin to enjoy it, and really kids love the repetition. So, you know, if
right.
you teach them something like that, sometimes you do have to kind of teach them the pleasure in the beginning, but once they get it, then they love the back and forth. So that's
right.
That's perfect time to work in some. Well, in the early stages, just them making some effort as they're communicating, and then as it gets
right.
further along, we build on that and
yeah. up the ante a little bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling them, because they were saying, well, he can take it off, but I don't know about him being able to put that back on. And this actually is what Dad told me last week. And I said, well, I think he can do it. And so I just kind of put the blanket, you know, almost stuffed it in his little hand. You know, he doesn't have great hand movement either, so a lot of the times his little hands stay closed. And so after he was really kind of into it, he really did start to try to do it on his own, you know, and
uh-huh.
I was really talking to Grandma today about that's his part. That's, you know, he can't say boo yet, and it might be a long time before we hear boo, but his part is covering and uncovering his head, wanting to keep the game going, really looking at you and laughing and smiling. You know, that's his part of that little job, or, you know, that's his job in the game. And how even with his limitations, we still need to expect him to be able to play that way. And again, like, I love what you just said, it's the foundation, it's what we're going to build on for, you know, the other little communicative things we're going to teach him. So Big is one of those little games that I want him to be able to do, because he's kind of a flailer with his arms. So he can sometimes get those arms up. So, you know, that's another little game we're going to play. He can't really do midline, so Patty Cake isn't going to be a great game for him. But Patty Cake is what your little guy's doing right now, right, Kate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Mom's working on So Big, too.
Yeah. Those are great ones. I like other ones. Ride a little horsey, where you put them on your lap. You put your legs right out in front of you, and you bounce them on your lap, and you know you sing, ride a little horsey to town, watch out, and you say their name, don't fall down, and then you open your legs and let them fall through to the floor. And you're sitting on the floor, so it's not like they're falling very far, and you're still holding their arms, but that's a real fun one that kids want to do because they like that bouncy, bouncy part. You do another version of that, don't you, Kate? Don't you have another bouncy song you do?
Nope. Usually I do
okay.
Ride a Little Horsey. That's my standard, too.
Maybe I'm thinking about Michelle. I think Michelle does the This Is the Way, the Gentleman Ride, the Gentleman Ride, the Gentleman Ride. Do you know that song?
Yeah.
Well, Our friend Michelle does that. But any of those little games, and again, you can move on to little songs like Itsy Bitsy Spider, where you're doing little hand motions there. Open Shut Them is a fun little song to sing, where kids are opening and closing their hands. And again, for a full list of that, look on the website at teachmetotalk.com, and you can get a whole little list of those and add some new little games there, those little social routines, as we like to call those. And again, most children in typical language development have several of those that they do with their parents even before they're a year old. And if you're thinking, again, my kid's too old for that, if he's never done those with you, and if that's not something that has been part of your history, you do want to bring those out, and you do want to try to do those, especially for kids who've had poor interaction and who are late talkers, even if they are considerably older than that one-year mark. And I do those little songs with brothers and sisters all the time that are 4 and 5, and they still think those are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think so, Kate?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and if you have kids that are more mobile, certainly Ring Around the Rosies is a fun thing to do. Kate's little getcha game, where you're kind of chasing them, and you know, you can do that seated on the floor, where you're going to reach out and get them, or, you know, a real live kind of running game through the house where you catch them and then tickle them real big and then have them do that again. All those little fun routines where their part is to really participate by smiling and laughing and giggling and lighting up, and then getting the joke, getting that it's fun for you to catch them, and you know they want to do it again and again and again. So those are fun little things to do. The article, I like that it broke down the development of play skills for infants and toddlers. Some of the stuff was pretty basic, again, basic information for probably most of our listeners. But beyond the social games that they have listed, let's look at this chart. They start to really talk about playing with objects, you know, by age 12 months, exploring objects by shaking or banging them, and then by 13 to 24 months, or usually between that first and second birthday, is when kids start to really play more with toys and things, and it lists some ideas for toddler playtime, things that you have at home, you know, like dishes, wooden spoons, cardboard boxes, empty plastic food containers. Also, early toys like board books, balls, stackable cups, blocks, dolls, simple puzzles, etc. I got a great book. I don't know if I've told you about this yet, Kate. The book that I just bought about using fine motor and gross motor activities for playtime to increase social interaction. Have I mentioned that to you?
No. Sounds good, though.
Yeah. It's by Barbara Scherr. Let's see. I thought I had it right here. So it's probably my basket in the other room. But it's written by an OT who has worked with lots of children. I think she's had, oh gosh, I think 30, 35 years experience. And she's in a school system now, but she's written this great book to talk about how to turn lots of your fine motor and gross motor games into social interaction. Okay, here's the book. It's called... Oh, no, it's not right here. Oh, well, I'm going to find that book in just a second. But it's, but the whole premise of the book is taking any kind of game like chase or playing in water or blowing feathers, any kind of little interaction.
Fruit leaf bubbles.
Yeah, and making that really, really social and how to do that. And she does a really good job of taking the game or the activity, giving you different variations. And she also does a good job of saying how you can modify it for different children. Like if you have a child who doesn't really want to stay with the group, how you could help that child participate more. Like one of her examples was filling, like having a big cardboard box and having the flaps out of the bottom so that there's not really a bottom. And so you have a group of children and you might have everyone throw the ball in. And, you know, everybody takes their turn throwing the ball in. You're all having a great time, you know, and if you have a kid who doesn't really want to join in the group, you might have him do it first and then stand back and watch everybody. Or if he needed to watch everybody do it first and then have a turn. You know, again, she just takes lots of time to spell out exactly what the steps could be or what your modifications would be. If a child who didn't like different textures, she might talk about how to kind of modify that through all different kinds of activities. But she lays it out there, and I love it. And I'm so disappointed that I can't find this book to tell you what the name of that is. But I'll put that on the under our article about the podcast today, but it's a good one, Kate. I'll have to loan that to you. I think you'll like it a lot. But it really, it's got good ideas for classes. And I was thinking about you when I bought that with your teacher that you're helping with that child that you're seeing in that class that we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good ideas for you in that one, too.
Okay.
All right.
We have a ways to go before we get to that.
Oh, in that classroom?
Oh, yeah.
These are very basic activities, though. I don't know. I think you might...
Oh, maybe, but we're still... It's a work in project. You know what I mean.
Yeah, a work in progress.
Work in progress, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I've got my cordless phone now. I'm walking around to see if I can find that book, but that may not happen. Okay, other toys that we really like for toddlers, we've kind of been talking about this too. What are our newer things that we've played with lately that we've really started to like and that were getting good responses. This week I brought my microwave back out with my pretend food with Cookie Monster and, you know, the food that we cut, and then we cook it in the oven, and then we let Cookie Monster pretend to eat that food. I've had a lot of fun with that game this week with my little clients on my caseload. Okay, good. I found the book. It's called Early Intervention Games, and it's by Barbara Sher, S-H-E-R. Is that how you would say that? Sher, Sher?
S-H-E-R. I don't know. S-H-E-R. Sher,
yeah.
Yes.
And the publisher sure. is, sure, maybe? I don't know. I don't either. The publisher is Josie Bass.
That sounds good.
Yeah. It was $15, $16, I think. And I think lots of good ideas. Okay, now I'm out of breath since I've walked up
okay,
a flight of
so,
stairs.
Which toy were you talking about? Oh, the microwave, yes. This week I've been doing a fair amount of babies, and let me just say this because I guess I have more girls than usual, but with babies I like to have a lot of accessories, you know,
yeah.
So anybody listening, you know, if you're trying to have a lot of fun with a baby doll, lots of fun accessories. I always like to have Band-Aids and powder and, you know, every kind of utensil, and kids, you know, if the more you have to engage them and intrigue them with the stuff, usually that means they'll do it for longer and enjoy it more. So,
yeah, I have a lot of stuff in my bag with that too. I think play, making the baby go to sleep, you know, for night-night, so having a little blanket or a little sleeping bag or carrier-looking mm-hmm. little thing is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of brushes, so you can brush hair.
But I have
what?
A lot of my babies are all very loved. Let's just say that their hair leaves a lot to be desired, and I have little barrettes. One of my little black girls that I see always has really matching barrettes with all of her little outfits, you know, and
uh-huh.
she likes to play babies.
So have you been putting the barrettes in the baby's hair too?
Yeah, because she's, you know, a speechy kid, and
uh-huh.
it's appropriate for her to have lots of repetition on things. So, yeah, she...
Oh, cute.
Yeah, we have lots of barrettes.
I have a little girl, my little Violet that I've been talking about, loves babies too. And this week her mom and I were talking about that because she said, what do you know, I'm starting to do some Christmas shopping, and I've had grandparents and aunts and uncles ask me, and what would you get for her? And I said, oh, my gosh, more baby stuff, exactly what you were talking about, Kate, not just one spoon and one bowl and, you know, one little brush or something, lots of things so that they have more opportunities to be creative with that. You know, I think several little bottles, one that looks like it has juice, one that has milk, you know, a couple little sippy cups. I have a sippy cup or two that you can, some that you can't take the tops off, but a couple that you can
the
take the tops.
The ones you can open, those are the
yeah.
coolest ones, aren't they?
Yes, and kids love to really work at getting that top off and then get the top back on, and then pretend like we're pouring the milk in from one bottle, and then we put the top back on, and then we let the baby drink it, and then I'll say, yuck, no, baby doesn't want juice, she wants milk, and then we pretend we open it, you know, back up, and we're pouring it, the other liquid back in. So you can do tons of stuff with that. Sometimes I do let kids go and get real water with it, and boy, you can see mom's eyes get really big, like, I cannot believe she's doing this. But that's a lot of fun, too.
They do love it with water. Well, I have one that potties, so I have a
That's fun.
Oh, it is fun. Yep, they pee-pee right on the potty. So water is really good for that. But one of my prized possessions with baby stuff is my little plastic toothbrush.
Yes, I have a toothbrush, too.
Don't they? They really like the toothbrush.
They love that. After you've wrangled it out of their mouths, their own little mouths, and gone and scalded it under the hot water, Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I have a pretend little tube of toothpaste, too. It doesn't squirt out real toothpaste.
So do I,
Yeah, but that's a lot of fun. That's a good thing to have with it. Sometimes
I like to have a couple of hats. Hats are a lot of fun.
I have hats and
with
shirts
babies.
And and socks, little socks. With some kids we call them shoes, and some kids we call them socks. They're the little slipper things, but that's always a lot of fun with putting them on and taking them off and kind of mismatching them.
Oh, yeah, I have a variety of shoes and boots.
Yeah.
A couple of pairs of boots now, yeah.
So lots of variety with the baby accessories. You can do that. And
right.
Even little boys, it's important to play baby dolls with little boys, too. And I have a lot of little boys that will play that. And usually the little girls, I think it's pretty funny how kind of genetically programmed we must be for that, because I think girls might stick with it a little longer. But I have a couple little boys right now that are playing that and loving it. So
Just as boys will love balls and choo-choos, girls at one point will love babies, at least if you have the right accessories and you...
Yeah, a stroller's real fun for that, a little baby stroller. You know, that's not something I take with me, but
I do have a little plastic bathtub, though. That's fun.
I was going to talk about that if I could go, too. Yeah.
Just a cheap little, whatever it is, a baby comes in it originally or something, doesn't it? You know,
and I either put just like,
kind of
and I'll put like a quarter inch of water in it. Or sometimes if the house is really immaculate and I think, oh, no, this mom's going to freak out if I have water in here, I even take my wipes, you know, that we used to clean the toys. I nearly always use that Wet Ones variety so that you can actually have the kids hold it and, you know, wash their own faces and hands with it, and it's not like using a Clorox wipe or a Lysol wipe.
And why is it, this is a universal thing, why is it that both girls and boys love wipes? What is it about wipes that little kids...
I don't know. I think it's that imitating housework activity that they just absolutely love.
I guess it is. Yeah, I guess it is. But and parents, that one always kind of gets parents too. But I think nothing wrong with that. They, you know, they want to wipe the toys and they want to, you know, don't you have parents that kind of, oh, he doesn't need any wipes.
Yeah, don't, or they'll say, don't get him started, please. Don't get him started on that. He's not going to get to play with my wipes like you let him have four of yours. But, you know, I'll squeeze the water from the wipe into the bathtub for the baby. Oh, that is fun. And they'll try to say,
Why is it that that's another universal thing? Not only do they like them, they're definitely going to squeeze them, squeeze all the juice out of the wipe. I guess that's why they like them.
Well, it's a cause and effect thing.
Yeah.
And they really can, you know, they can see that water go down. And then you teach them, oh, wipe it back up and let's do it again. And, they love that. But that book I was just talking about, that Barbara Sher book, has tons of water games in there, too, and little ideas. She has, she talked about doing, for kids.
I can't believe you haven't told me about this book. This sounds good.
I got it last Saturday. I told you about the other books that I got, but I didn't tell you about the best one.
Yeah.
One that's actually got the treatment ideas in it. But she talked about getting little medicine droppers and teaching kids how to, you know, she's an OT, so she would naturally be looking at kind of the fine motor aspect of that, but putting the medicine dropper into the water and then teaching them how to squeeze the little bulb and then pick it up and then squirt each other with the water from the medicine dropper. That would be a fun game. I think kids would love that.
Oh, yes, they would.
Now, I did not venture forth and get those supplies for this week, and we may have to wait until it's warm again before I play that. But I think that's a great game.
Yeah, it is.
And she's got a ton of little water games in there. I'll loan you that book this week. But I will put that on the website, too, because I think it's, if there are therapists listening, they're certainly would be worth your money for some new ideas.
Yeah, that's
And especially
good.
If you have to serve groups and if you're helping preschool teachers like you are right now, Kate, come up with new activities and fun activities, that would be a book worth investing in. The other toy that we were talking about that I've been having a lot of fun this week with is I bought a new, I think it's called the Animal Hospital. It's a parent's toy, so I got it at Target, but it's got keys. It has six doors that are colored and then six matching keys. And so, and, you know, the keys are different shapes, so they have to fit in the, you have to match it, you know, the purple key with the purple door. And kids have had a blast with that. It comes with little plush toys, like little pets, like you're taking care of them. But I just took all that out because I don't like to use any toy that I can't really wash. And so I took those out, and I just put my little characters in there, like Elmo and Dora and Diego and Cookie Monster. And I, for a little boy of mine that loves cars, I put different cars in there, or even Thomas. And that's been a lot of fun with them picking the right key to match the door, getting the key in, turning the lock, and then opening the door to get the surprise. And we've just had a lot of fun with that. And I think, and you said this today when we were talking on the phone, any toy with keys and doors is an instant winner mm-hmm. with most toddlers, with most two-year-olds.
Especially boys, but girls like them too. But definitely boys are very intrigued by keys and doors.
Yeah, and they'll sit and really work. And kids that you're working, you know, that you're concerned about cognitively, that they might not like puzzles, or they might not like something else where you're working on matching. Oh my goodness, get a door that you have to match the right key to the right color, and you can work on matching so much in a more fun way with that kind of thing than maybe a puzzle or a kid who's just sick to death of that traditional kind of matching, or who won't even attend for that. But when they don't even know that they're matching, you know, when it's just kind of part of you've got to do it to be able to get the fun thing out of the house, that's a way to kind of work that play in and it not be so boring and it be more fun for a toddler. Any other toys? Were you talking about that new, did you get a new Diego racetrack?
Yeah, it's a spirally track. It's like Diego's Rescue Center or something like that.
Where'd you get it?
TJ Maxx.
Mm-hmm.
So it was reasonably priced. And, of course, I have all other kinds of vehicles that it's not just the Diego stuff, because I have all my other things with it, too, for those kids who are vehicle obsessed.
Yeah. And does it have a little, how do you make the cars go? Do you just put it in and it goes down, or do you have to activate it with a little lever?
That part isn't great as far as that. It could be better. It's kind of has a lift thing, and then when the lift gets to the top, you automatically activate it and it goes down.
Okay.
So, but it's, you know, not that easy for kids to do as far as lifting it. So.
Well, that's kind of good because they have
so
to
So then they need help. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can practice that sign, help, or help me, if you're doing phrases or just using your word or just patting you on your leg like, hey, lady, I need your help, you know, for those kids who don't realize that they need to initiate like that. So that's a good one. If you can't always do it by yourself, then you can't mm-hmm. tune the adult out.
Yeah, that's kind of always inherent in all of the toys that I think we think are the best toys is the ones that kids really, really like, but they need somebody to do it with them, you know,
right.
Make it effective, to make it rewarding, or, you know, they love them, but they can't quite do them yet, so they're going to you to get.
Yeah, and that's what we like about that. And some parents will think, no, I want him to have a toy that he can play with completely by himself, that he doesn't need my help. And I understand from a parent's perspective how you need those kinds of things when you need to cook dinner or you're in the shower or you've got to make a phone call. But all the toys really shouldn't be that way. You should have some hard ones, too, like you say, Kate, that they love, but that they need your help to want to do that. So that's those are our favorite ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why we tend to go on about discouraging having too many toys where you push the button and the light goes off
right.
and the music plays, or, you know, just those simple, or even worse yet are the ones where you push the button and it sings the ABCs over and over and over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And kids will do them, and parents think, well, that's educational, you know, that's 1, 2, 3s and ABCs, and, you know, if they're just pushing the button and it's no more educational than the baby toy where you push the button and the light goes off, you know, so.
Right, it's the same thing,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and you don't want kids who get so hyper-focused on that kind of play really miss the other more mature and more interactive kinds of play. So most of the time with those kinds of toys, if we recommend to parents that they put them away or take the batteries out so that kids move on and find other things to do. And again, that you're always wanting to move them up that developmental ladder and have them do things that are a little harder than what they've done before. And the unfortunate thing is so many kids, especially kids with autism or who are on the spectrum, kind of get stuck in that push the button, push the button, push the button, push the button, and they don't move on to that more advanced play. So those aren't our favorite kinds of toys. I've got an article on the website at teachmetotalk.com that's called Ditch the Bells, Whistles, Flashing Lights, DVDs, and ABCs. And that certainly would sum up our opinion about those kinds of toys. We don't really want kids playing with those. We want them to move on and do some other things. You know, I didn't get to talk about this last week on the show in our little intervention insights segment that we wanted to start, so I want to talk about it now. And it's kind of related to this. Remember the several years back, Kate, when the whole Baby Einstein DVD
mm-hmm.
craze kind of was out?
Right.
Well, you know, and every kid we saw in our caseload would have not just one Baby Einstein DVD, but all of them. And parents would think that they were getting doing a very good job because they were going to put their child in front of the TV and have them watch it. And their children were going to be geniuses, like that name applies, Baby Einstein. Well, now Walt Disney Company is offering refunds for all those videos that did not make children into geniuses. Have you seen that in the New York Times?
You know, I've heard you make reference to it, but no, I haven't seen the article.
Yeah. Well, apparently there's a lawsuit against Disney that parents can, let's see, let me read it right here. In 2006, Ms. Lynn's group, I guess I've missed who Ms. Lynn is, went to the Federal Trade Commission to complain about the educational claims made by Disney and another company, Brainy Baby. As a result, the companies dropped the word educational from their marketing, but the group didn't think that was enough. So last year, the lawyers threatened a class action lawsuit for unfair and deceptive advertising unless Disney agreed to refund the full purchase price to anybody who bought those videos since 2004. So parents can, if you have lots of those DVDs and you feel like you were misled on that and want to get your money back, Disney is offering that refund to parents. And so I saw that in a little newsletter that I get from another speech pathologist. Her website is, oh my goodness, I can't even find everything I need today. Her website, oh shoot, I can't even find it. Her name is Sherry, I can't even remember her last name either. Boy, I'm having some issues today. But anyway, she sent me that link about that, and she had written a letter back to the New York Times that says, it's really kind of cute, let me read it. She says, to the editor, am I hearing a sigh of relief from conscientious parents pressured to keep up with the to-do list for raising the next Einstein? As a speech-language pathologist, I congratulate the persevering advocacy groups who forced the answer to the question many of us have been asking since the baby video boom. Where is the research to support it? An impressive marketing campaign implying that watching videos will build a brighter baby convinced parents of the urgency to use these videos. Even as research mounted to the contrary, the myth persisted. Finally, the voice of infants is heard. Turn off the screens and talk to me. Babies learn language in the context of playing, reading, and talking with real people in real time. And then she says, who knew? Actually, we all did. And so then she signs it, her name. So I thought that was pretty clever.
And what was she?
She's a speech-language pathologist who wrote back in response to the New York Times article. And the article is called No Einstein in Your Crib, Get a Refund. That's pretty cute. And we've been talking about that for a long time.
Yeah.
These DVDs that, you know, for a while we kind of, you know, I would joke and say they were the autism maker because some kids get so enthralled with watching it that, and I'm just joking about that. I hope I don't hear from anybody on that comment, but that they exclude everything else in their environments and are so addicted to those darn DVDs and want to watch TV, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. And granted, you know, I understand why some moms would use that, and I even probably overdid that when my children were younger, but the American Academy of Pediatrics thinks you should have no TV time for children under two, and something like, what, an hour or 30 minutes a day after that? I don't remember what the – do you remember what the recommendation is, Kate?
Not specifically, just that it was really very low, and none before, too.
Yeah. But,
I mean, I think even that is, you know, there's nothing inherently bad about a little bit of time spent in front of a TV or a DVD or something, but for kids who really, you know, want to do that a lot of the time and then are allowed to, you know.
Right. I know, you're not doing your kid any favors there, and you're certainly not helping increase their IQs or anything. Babies learn to talk from parents. They don't learn from TVs. They don't learn by looking at pictures in a book all by themselves. Babies learn language from other people. They don't learn in daycare from other babies. Babies learn from grown-ups who take the time to interact with them, to play with them, and to teach them the words.
Which doesn't happen
in
most daycares.
Yeah, really. If that's your reason for daycare, then you're really going to be, yeah, really going to be disappointed. So I thought that was my little intervention insight, is that if you feel gypped that you don't end up with Einstein because your kid watched that DVD, well, now you can get your money back. I thought that was cute. Okay, one other thing that I've been trying to talk about for a few weeks on here, on the show too, when we've been talking about play, is kind of the sequence that children learn to use toys. And again, the other article that we were referring to said that toys aren't really effective for children, or aren't, you know, under about a year, they don't really know how to use them, unless it's just kind of the push the button variety. But between 12 months and 24 months for typically developing children, they do kind of learn how to start to play and how to start to use a lot of toys. And so, but sometimes you'll get a child who is really delayed and who doesn't know how to play. They really, the only thing that they might not be interested in toys at all. They may only do really repetitive things, like we were talking about the little boy at the beginning of the show, where he might just roll the wheels on the choo-choo back and forth, back and forth. He likes trains, but he does not understand that you hook them together and that you move them around the track and that you go in the tunnel and you put them in and out of the little house, or, you know, whatever else comes with your set. He only knows that he likes the wheels going back and forth. And so I found this sequence of play with the order that you would introduce toys. And we only have 7 minutes left. We are not going to spill over with this to the next show. I'm just going to zip through it, and then I'll summarize it and put it on the website too. But the first kinds of things that kids learn to do with basic play is that they take things apart and put them together. And that would be like if you had one of those really early puzzles with, say, three big pieces, you know, a dog, a cat, and a fish, that they would learn. The first thing is you would put the piece in, and they would learn to take that piece out and then eventually put that back in. Other kinds of toys that I can think of for that would be kids who learn about pushing the big Duplo Legos. That would be an example of that. Even like, I guess a potato head would kind of fall into that category, huh, Kate, where you put the things in and then let them pull those pieces off.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any other things that would be like that, take apart, put together?
Yeah.
I think those are the big ones.
Yeah, I mean, on some level, the bald ramp toy is kind of the same sort of.
Yeah, where you put the ball in the hole,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of goes down, then comes out, and you put it back in the hole, yeah.
Which is a universally great toy for those people,
yeah.
who are, especially from about 9 months on, really, I mean, unless typically, but maybe a little older if they have some delays, but very simple, very engaging.
Yeah, I like my little Tommy, however you say that name, company toy that's the gumball machine, where you put
mm-hmm.
the ball on the top and you pull the lever and the ball comes out the bottom. That's kind of another take on that. But anything where you would take one little piece of the part of that toy that actually goes together and just kind of do that repetitive action, over and over again. The next step is called put on or put in, and this is where the child puts two different items together in a simple combination, such as placing one item into a different item or one item on top of another. And that would be like taking a little Fisher-Price daddy and making him ride the tractor, or taking a hat and putting it on the baby, where you're taking something that doesn't really belong with the toy and making it interact with the other toy. And isn't it interesting, Kate, the number of kids that you'll see that the kid doesn't understand that the daddy rides in the tractor. They only want to push the tractor, and you try to put the daddy in there, and they get really, really mad. And it's because play-wise, they're not to that point yet. They're not to the point where they understand that those things go together, and that kind of makes the play more fun. But I always think that's kind of interesting when I see that. Or I'll put a hat on a baby, and a kid gets really mad, and they want the hat off. You know, or the shirt, you know, they only want the naked baby. They don't want anything on the baby, just the naked baby.
Yeah, I don't know quite why that is, but that's fairly universal, too. Kids always want to strip the babies immediately.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but.
Well, if they're taking it off, that's they're kind of at this level of play where they're, you know, put it back on, put it off. And I do have a lot of kids that'll take a long time. Hat on, hat off, hat on, hat off. Or they'll want me to put the shirt on, then they take it off as soon as I've gotten it on there. So that is kind of interesting how that happens. The next phase would be pretending to eat. At this play, the child uses an external object to do an action on himself, like as him pretending to put on a hat or him pretending to brush his hair or pretending to eat the play food or drink from the baby's bottle. That's pretty early on, too, that you could get kids to do that.
Right.
It's on my little language test, the Rosetta Infant Toddler Language Scale. That's a 12 to 15-month skill where kids are pretending that they'll do that themselves. And I think, you know, sometimes it's different than mouthing. It's different from a 6-month-old or a 9-month-old that would, you know, put everything in their mouth just to explore it that way. It's where they kind of understand it and they're kind of smiling with you like, I'm going to try to drink this baby's bottle. And they, you know, it's not like that literature play.
Take
really
a little hairbrush and brush their own hair and look at you like, I'm a big girl, I'm brushing my hair.
Yeah, that's really cute. And then they say the next step is to build a tower. I would probably think that went before some of these other things, but that's just my opinion. This would be where the child combines items which are intended to go together in the appropriate way, such as stacking nesting cups, stringing beads together, or connecting segments of the train track. So, again, where it's that real constructive play. So that would come next. So those are kind of the basic play things. And that's where I think where we start with most children with play. And if we get a kid who doesn't know how to play at all, which does happen on our caseloads, you know, those are the kids that you and I, we call each other and kind of scratch our heads. Those are the kinds of toys that we should be playing with first. And then the next set of...
And my always best effort is my wonderful Puffle-Up Cookie Monster. If I can't get I can get little kids to feed that guy a cookie.
Yeah, that's a great toy.
Mm-hmm.
We had an email several weeks back where a speech pathologist was looking for that toy because it's a cookie monster that eats. His mouth is designed, it's like a puppet, and then the food ends up in his backpack, and that is just a surprise. For any kid who plays with that at the beginning, they love that. They just think it's so cool. Gosh, I put the cookie in his mouth, and then voila, it's in his backpack when we look back there. So that's a fun one. And it is, I do have good luck with that, with kids that maybe won't understand how to feed a baby doll or even pretend to feed me. They'll start with that cookie monster.
They'll do cookie monster, of course. You have to really. And, you know, Laura, I don't know that we said enough times about the importance of being really, really, really animated and playful and, you know, smiley and engaging.
Right.
Throughout all of these things.
Yeah, you can't just say, here's Cookie, we're going to feed Cookie Monster. You know, it has to be, oh, look, he's hungry. Oh, my goodness, look, Cookie. Where's the cookie? Give it to him. Eat. Yum, 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 yum. You know, and that kind of that kind of over-the-top, exaggerated response really can hook most children
mm-hmm.
into wanting to interact with you and play with you and actually take the cookie and put it in his mouth. And a lot of times I think they're it's not nearly as fun, you know, if I'm not doing the yum, 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 you know, over-the-top kind of reaction. Some of the times they're not even looking at Cookie Monster at that point. They're looking at me. And
right.
I think, oh, yeah, we've accomplished our goal here.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten this whole joint attention thing and the reciprocity piece, but they're looking at me, I'm looking at them, they're laughing, I'm laughing, and we're going back and forth. And that's what you want to – that should be your goal for all your play. And even these steps that we're talking about with basic play with kids, you know, for kids who don't know how to play with toys, I still don't start there. You know, I'm starting with that – the interaction and the social stuff that we talked about at the beginning today. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and summarize this too and get this on the website, the rest of the play information with what little steps would come next. Maybe we'll finish talking about this piece next week and get some of our other play ideas kind of pulled together a little bit and just kind of move in with that. But we would love to have your calls, your emails. You can email me at laura@teachmetotalk.com or leave a comment on the website there, and we would love to tackle your questions about play, one of our favorite topics.
Well,
you
I made it.
Still hanging in there?
I made it without having to run anywhere, so that's good.
Oh,
that's
I hope you
than
feel better.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah.
Hope it's not flu.
I hope it's not either. You know, that's how it's been starting
with
my episode a couple weeks ago, and our oldest son is home with that today, and that's exactly how he started his upset stomach. So I hope you're not getting that. I'll have to call you later and check on you.
Well, if I don't answer, I'm sleeping.
Okay, there you go. All right,
okay.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.